What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, HoopsHype.com's NBA writer and host of the Hoops Hype podcast. On today's episode, our Hoops Hype salary cap expert, Yossi Goslin, joins me for our weekly podcast. We're going to break down the offseason for the NBA champion, Milwaukee Bucks, take a look at the rumors surrounding the Pelicans having interest in free agent point guard Kyle Lowry, and some teams that are expected to be in the mix for free agent center Rashawn Holmes as well. But Yossi, first off, we got to start with the Milwaukee Bucks, the NBA champions. An incredible season for them. You know, they beat the team that some people thought were the favorite in the Brooklyn Nets. They gave the Miami Heat a run for their money and made their way up to the finals and then take down the Suns. But now, looking ahead towards the offseason while they're celebrating, they've got some key guys that are going to be up for pay raises, and it's going to be tough for them potentially to keep them. And, you know, the first guy that comes to mind, well, there's a couple, but, you know, right away, Bobby Portis has a $3.8 million player option, and Bryn Forbes has a $2.4 million player option. Both of those guys exceeded those contracts exponentially, and they're both expected to opt out. So with that in mind, it looks to me, especially for a guy like Bobby Portis, who played really well, it's going to be tough for Milwaukee to keep him. It's going to be interesting to see if Bobby, who was adored by fans in Milwaukee, is willing to give the organization maybe some type of a hometown discount. He certainly talked about how much he's loved the role. And, you know, you got Bryn Forbes, who had a great year shooting the ball. So from a salary cap perspective, Yossi, what does it look like for Milwaukee, their chances to bring back potentially Bobby Portis and or Bryn Forbes?
From a salary cap perspective, I feel like the Bucks might end up doing the least in free agency. They might do like just, you know, try to re-sign one or two of these guys, re-sign Tucker, and then maybe use their mid-level, and that's basically it. And I don't think they're going to make any splashy trade or anything like that. Now, yes, as far as these two guys, bringing back both Portis and Forbes will be challenging. I think there's a pretty good chance Portis could leave, since he's going to get offers close to the 9.5 MLE or even higher. The most the Bucks can offer him would be the $5.9 million taxpayer MLE. He could also resign for his non-Brit amount, which is $4.3 million. If he wants to help the Bucks out and let them use their mid-level elsewhere, I wouldn't totally rule him out returning, just because I could see him. It wouldn't shock me if he returned on a one-year deal where, you know, he'd be losing some money up front, but then he'd have early bird rights next year, and then he could resign on a long-term deal then. So I wouldn't completely rule that out, but either way, he would be passing up on some big offers if he were to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, I saw a tweet on the Jump that Bobby Portis said, quote, "I do love it here, though. I don't even want to go anywhere." Yeah, maybe in his heart he doesn't. He's certainly beloved there. But like you talked about, the financial aspect of that, I always worry, you know, when there's kind of those wink, wink, handshake deals where you take a short-term deal hoping that you're going to get paid on the back end. That,
right.
What if something happens to Bobby and he gets hurt? I mean, the guy really stuck out, had a great year, and in the playoffs, no less, when it matters the most. This should be another time where he can cash in. And, you know, his agent, Mark Bartlestein of Priority Sports, has shown an ability over the past to certainly get his guys paid. So I have no doubt in my mind that, you know, once the market opens up, Bobby's going to have a decent amount of suitors. I think of the two guys from a financial aspect, and you could speak more to this, Bryn Forbes would appear to be the guy that is more likely to come back. I mean, he had a great year shooting the ball, you know, 47% overall and 45 from three. But, you know, we saw guys like Joe Harris and Davis Bertans that are shooters get paid well. But I don't think he's obviously going to make that much. But shooters are always in demand in free agency, and he is expected to cash in. I just think that he could fit maybe more into Milwaukee's financial structure right now than Bobby Portis.
Yeah, I agree. He's definitely a more realistic option to return between him and Portis. I think good chance he could end up getting the taxpayer mid level, since his non-bird is like, I think it's like 3 mil or something, or maybe even lower, or maybe like 2.5 mil, something like that. But he started off really hot in the playoffs, and then he kind of cooled off since the Miami series. But he still shot 45% from three last year. So I think this was really a great experience, because you brought up Davies Bertans. He was another guy who didn't really like get the best opportunity with the Spurs. And as soon as he went to another team, he got unleashed. And something similar kind of happened to Bryn Forbes this year. I think he's really being noticed now. And I think a lot of teams should have interest in will have interest in him this summer. Obviously, the pipe dream scenario would be that they could get back both Bobby and Forbes for their non-bird amounts, and even and then have the MLE to use on someone else. But you brought up Joe Harris and Davies Bertans. He's not going to get that type of offer this offseason. I would be surprised if he does. But what if he came back on a 1 or 2 year deal where he's making around the taxpayer mid-level, which is about $6 million? You know, it's a raise, like more than double what he just made. And then if he plays well, he can get back on the market and maybe earn as much as the Joe Harris's and Davies Bertans.
You know, I just think for Bryn, again, this is just an opinion. This isn't a report. I could see somebody going into the high single digits for him, annually, but you know, again, it's the thing with the free agent market is things are always fluid. So sometimes when a team misses out on a guy that they were targeting, they'll overpay a little bit to get another guy and, you know, try to weaken a competitor by taking a player off their team. You know, while Milwaukee may have a little bit of a challenge trying to keep both Bobby Portis and Bryn Forbes, or maybe lose one of them, they have, from a salary cap perspective, the best chance of keeping another key free agent for them, PJ Tucker. And to me, first of all, Giannis Antetokounmpo gave PJ Tucker a glowing review after the Brooklyn series and the job that he did. You know, Giannis said, quote, you know, he makes everything tough on KD. He's vocal. He's a leader. He pushes us to be great. He's definitely a big piece of this organization and this team. He's going to keep helping us. We definitely need him moving forward. Those words proved to be prophetic, as PJ did a great job on defense and helped Milwaukee as a role player take that next step and win the championship. To me, there's no reason why, from a financial perspective, PJ Tucker shouldn't be back with the Bucks. I think he's best valued on a playoff type of team. And most of these teams, they're only going to have the mid-level exception to work with, you know, but there's a few exceptions like the New York Knicks, for example. But, you know, I think Milwaukee does have the best chance to keep him with their ability to spend for him. And I'll let you kind of break it down as to why Milwaukee has a better chance to keep PJ from a salary cap perspective than maybe a guy like Bobby Portis or Bryn Forbes.
Right, so they have PJ Tucker's full bird right, so they can offer him up to the max. Like I mentioned earlier, they're not going to have much flexibility at all to do anything other than trying to re-sign their free agents. Because of that, they're also not going to have that much flexibility going forward. They're not going to have that many guys to make trades with down the line. They have three guys making $30 million plus. And then they've got Lopez making around $13 million. And then after that, you got Connaughton making like $5 million. And, you know, not a lot of tradable salaries there, not a lot of flexibility to do things later on. They're not going to have cap space, so you need some tradable salaries. So I think it would make a lot of sense if they extend PJ or extend Dante DiVincenzo and then re-sign PJ Tucker to mid-tier salaries in like around the Brook Lopez type of range. They just need more tradable salaries down the line. Now, Tucker, he previously declined a 2-year, $17 million extension, according to Woj, from Houston. that was only $10 million guaranteed. But I could see him, especially after they just won the title, I could see him getting a contract where he earns maybe around the same amount he just earned last season, like $8 million annually. He is getting a little up there in age, so whatever deal he would get, I'm sure it'll be that'll be like anything super long term. Maybe it'll be like a year by year type of thing. But either way, Tucker, he's got it'll be interesting to see just how much he gets, because they, especially if they lose Portis or even both Portis and Forbes, they're really going to have to, they cannot let Tucker go after what they, you know, he's their only, he's like their last guy to, you know, get, have like some more flexibility for trades later. So it'd be interesting to see if that ends up being some leverage on his end.
No, well said. I think he's certainly going to have, PJ's going to have suitors from other teams around the league. And, you know, given where he was at this year financially, I think declining that 2-year, $17 million extension offer, even if it was fully guaranteed, I think he's going to end up doing better than that after his playoff run. If you told me that PJ Tucker got even $10 million or a little bit more from Milwaukee, depending on how things shake out with Bobby Portis, I wouldn't be shocked at all. I think he certainly helped his case going to Milwaukee and playing a pivotal role on the title team. Guys always get paid when they're coming off a championship run. Usually it's from their own team. And again, the stars would align on paper for PJ in this case for that to happen, but time will tell. You also touched on the potential of extending Dante DiVincenzo. From my vantage point, I think that extending Dante DiVincenzo would be an interesting move for them, but maybe not for the reason that people think. To me, if you extend Dante DiVincenzo and you get a certain salary locked in, kind of closer to like that Brook Lopez range, he would be a guy that's easier to trade, and you don't have to just put him in as a throw-in guy. He can be more of the main type of piece based on his salary. So to me, that's something from a management perspective. When you talked about kind of the lack of flexibility, and it's not a bad thing. I mean, look, Milwaukee built this team to win a championship for a reason, and they succeeded in that. But in terms of flexibility to tinker with the roster going forward, potentially extending a guy like Dante would give them their best chance to do that. I'm not sure with Lopez what he would command on the market. The value for centers is always fluctuating and different. But, you know, again, he played well. And even in the playoffs, you saw him doing more than just shooting threes and blocking shots. He was dunking on people. And I think he certainly helped himself in that playoff run towards the championship as well.
Yeah. Like I was saying with Tucker, I think DiVincenzo gets extended, not just because they need him, but also for similar financial reasons. With Lopez, he's one of their only extension eligible guys. And I wonder if after winning this title, if both parties are interested in getting something done, he can get a maximum of 54 mil for in that 3 years on it. I don't know if he gets that full amount, but I could see him potentially wanting to just secure something now. And the Bucks, maybe they want to align his contract a little closer with Giannis's and Drew's. So that'll be interesting to see if that happens. Yeah,
that $18 million wouldn't be interesting, because for them, you're talking like an $18 million average annual salary. You're talking more like Clint Capella, Miles Turner money, which is interesting there. And, you know, you had also touched on a little bit how luxury tax wise, this team is going to be in a little bit of a pickle and a little bit of a quandary coming up.
Yeah, so they're going to be very expensive going forward, and it's going to get very deep each year as each player gets more and more expensive. So yeah, my Bucks offseason preview is up on hoopshype.com, and in it I made a projection where the Bucks, they could end up having like a $40 million tax bill just by re-signing Tucker if they give him a similar salary like he had last year. And they use the taxpayer money on somebody, whether it's a new player or one of Portis or Forbes. right? And then, you know, they have their second round pick. They're already going to be looking at around a $40 million tax bill. So, and I'm expecting that, you know, it'll probably be even higher because they'll extend the following year, because they'll extend DiVincenzo. Maybe they sign another guy with their MLE by then. It's going to keep getting pricier. Now, winning the title gave Drew Holiday an incentive that pushed the Bucks into the luxury tax for this season. So that's going to get him into the repeater tax a little sooner. And most likely they're going to end up being the repeater by the 23-24 season. So if, you know, if you thought their luxury tax payments are going to be pretty big now, wait till then. They're going to get way bigger. And I just think that's something to keep an eye on in terms of what their window of contention could have looked like, because they just had this run of 3 years where they've gotten really closer and finally won it this year. But I'll be interested to see just how good they are 3 years from now, because if things start to unravel a bit, some players start to fall off and they can't make any big improvements to get them back in at the top, I wouldn't be shocked if right before the 23-24 season, when these huge luxury tax payments are about to kick in, maybe they consider breaking it up or something. You know, I doubt that happens, but just something to, just a little timeline to keep in mind, which could play into some decision-making down the line.
Absolutely. And, you know, you saw how things can change on a dime. You know, when Milwaukee looked like they might lose to Brooklyn, Mike Budenholzer, a lot of people thought like he wouldn't be back, and potentially Rick Carlisle would end up there. And, you know, once they won, Carlisle goes to Indiana, Budenholzer stays, they win the title, and, you know, it's a completely different scenario now. But as you mentioned about Drew and those luxury tax implications, as well as a look at some of the guys that Milwaukee has in free agency, make sure you check out Yossi's latest Bucks offseason preview on hoopshype.com. And coming up next, we'll break down the Pelicans' rumors surrounding Kyle Lowry after a quick break.
Are you ready to jumpstart your career in the business of basketball? Are you looking for a leg up as you pursue your dream job in sports? If so, Sports Business Classroom is the choice for you. Sports Business Classroom is immersed and in-person at the NBA's Las Vegas Summer League and provides a great education brought to you by some of the biggest names in the game. From August 9th to the 14th, learn from the experts on topics like the salary cap, scouting and analytics, media and broadcasting. Head over to sportsbusinessclassroom.com to sign up. That's sportsbusinessclassroom.com.
Well, Yossi, lately in the rumor mill, we've heard Kyle Lowry's name come up with the New Orleans Pelicans. And I would say that this has quietly been out there for on the low for probably a week and a half, 2 weeks or so. You know, when I first heard it from some people, I wasn't as fully convinced, because they would have to, there'd have to be some dominoes here that had to come to fruition. But, you know, with that said, I think, you know, Matt Moore at the Action Network and Mark Stein and some others had commented on it as well. But for Kyle Lowry to get to the Pelicans, they're going to have to make some moves. And particularly, you know, guys that I think you and I had touched on dating back to the Western Conference Lottery Teams podcast that we did. Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe were two guys that some executives I had spoken to around the league felt could be tradable guys for New Orleans. And the thing here is, like, at that point, if you're going to try to offer Lowry the type of money he's looking for in free agency, they'd have to move one of those guys. So, you know, Bledsoe, I think, might be a little bit easier, because in a big man market, it always seems like it's been tougher to move those guys. You've always heard Miles Turner's name come up in trade talks, for example, but he doesn't get moved. And generally, guards are more valued than big men in the league right now. To me, it's going to be interesting. I don't know. My biggest thing is, like, the interest in Kyle Lowry to me makes sense from New Orleans trying to get better. You know, I don't think he's this Chris Paul type of player that can elevate them to, like, where the Suns were as – as a championship contender this season, but it would certainly make them a lot better for the short term. But getting there is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be that big of an issue for them to get there. There's several different ways to get there. Personally, I don't know how I feel about Lowry being on the Pelicans. Can't say that they're definitely trying to improve. They want to hit the playoffs. I don't know if that will get them there, but there's a handful of other destinations. Personally, I like to see Lowry in first, but if the Pelicans really want to get in the Lowry bidding, they could definitely offer him a very competitive offer, maybe even the most. So we talked about Eric Bledsoe and Steven Adams. Main thing with them is maybe there could be a bigger market for Adams just because there are some teams that could still use another center. But if we're just talking about who's easier to move salary wise, it would just be Bledsoe, mainly because next year he only has $3.9 million guaranteed. So there's a lot more wiggle room there, a little easier for teams to take him on. So right now the Pelicans, they could get to approximately like $14-15 million in cap space. If that's assuming that they let go of all their free agents, including Lonzo and Josh Hart. So that's probably not going to be enough for Lowry. I imagine he'll get offers of at least $20 million, maybe even more. Now, if they're to salary dump one of Bledsoe or Adams, then you basically get to roughly $30 million. So now you can make a very aggressive offer. Another thing they could do is stretch Eric Bledsoe, since he only has that $3.9 million guarantee next year. If they were to stretch him this offseason, he would only count for about $4.4 million over the next five seasons. I wouldn't really recommend that. I'm pretty against stretching for the most part, especially for that long, but that would get them there as well to like around $25-27 million range. Other than that, they're in a pretty good position to do a sign and trade. So if maybe the Raptors are interested in taking back one of Bledsoe and Adams, and maybe New Orleans can throw in something. They have the number 10 pick. They've got a couple young guards. I'm not trying to like say that's fair value for Lowry, but there's something that could definitely be worked with to make that happen. So there's several ways that the Pelicans could get Lowry and definitely get him on one of the bigger offers that other teams could offer.
Yeah, as far as Lowry goes, I know that he's older and I don't know if he's going to command the same level, but like in minimum, you're talking a guy, and again, this is the bare minimum, you're talking about a guy that could be worth, I don't know, $25 million. You'd still have to move one of those guys in Adams or Bledsoe to get there. If he got to $30 million and, it was a short-term deal, one-year deal, two-year deal, whatever have you, then I think there's more logic behind giving it to him because it's a short-term deal. And given his age, that would make more sense to me. I can't really – if Kyle Lowry ended up with like a three-year deal or something, that would be – interesting on the back end. But you know what, the other thing is like Chris Paul could opt down and get a three-year deal and maybe $100 million from the Suns. Like, you never know. So
the one other thing though is I feel like this could also be like a stealth real estate move from the Pelicans front office to sign Lowry. It's a win now move on the surface. But if things don't really work out and they struggle early on, I could see them also putting him on the market by the trade deadline and just trying to get a bunch of assets for him. We saw how many teams were interested in trading for Lowry in the trade deadline, but nothing didn't really happen. I think some of those teams were the Clippers, the Lakers, the Heat, Sixers. So if things don't work out early on, then, that's – I could see why it's still a good move for the Pelicans if they could get something good for him.
Yeah, Lowry's going to be one of the top free agents on our hoopshype.com rankings. be sure to check out that post as well. And coming up next, I'll share a few teams to keep an eye on for free agent center Rashawn Holmes after a quick break.
Are you ready to jumpstart your career in the business of basketball? Are you looking for a leg up as you pursue your dream job in sports? If so, Sports Business Classroom is the choice for you. Sports Business Classroom is immersed and in-person at the NBA's Las Vegas Summer League and provides a great education brought to you by some of the biggest names in the game. From August 9th to the 14th, learn from the experts on topics like the salary cap, scouting and analytics, media and broadcasting. Head over to sportsbusinessclassroom.com to sign up. That's sportsbusinessclassroom.com.
Yossi, when I look at the market for a guy like Rashawn Holmes, who's going to be one of the top centers and honestly one of the probably overall players that's available in free agency, given his position and the need there, I look at four teams that we need to keep an eye on as we near free agency for Rashawn Holmes, including the Sacramento Kings, who have his early bird rights, the Dallas Mavericks, the Charlotte Hornets, and the Toronto Raptors. You know, Holmes loves Sacramento. He touched on this in a podcast interview with me on Hoops Hype, but they're going to have to make a trade to free up some cap space if they want to keep him, most likely. I think that he is going to be able to get more than what Sacramento can pay him, and I'll let you break that down in a second, but it's going to be an interesting tug of war because he has loved Sacramento and the franchise that gave him the opportunity on the court and the way the fans have treated him off it. So kind of similar to Bobby Portis, a lot of different things for Rashawn Holmes to navigate, but yeah, as far as they go with the early bird rights and how they can try to take care of him, some of the other teams, I'll let you go in on that and kind of explain for the listeners.
All right. So Rashawn has early bird rights. So the maximum he could get, it's projected at 4 years, $47 million, which would give him a starting salary of about $10.5 million. This is the same type of contract that Reggie Jackson and Campaign, for example, are also going to be looking at with their teams this summer. That contract, it's a fine. I would say it would be like a good worst case scenario for Holmes if for some reason the market dried up on him. But with several teams with cap space pursuing him, he should get offers exceeding that amount, which will put the Kings in a tough spot if they're serious about retaining him. Right now, they don't really have any way to get serious cap space. They would, so if they want to offer more than his early bird amount, they would have to get off of some salaries and create some cap space to resign him. A couple of ways they could do it: they could salary dump players such as Deion Ryder, Marvin Bagley. Obviously not just a straight salary dump. Those players have value. You can get a little something back for them. They could also consider trading one of Hield or Barnes to get a type of deal where they get some cheaper players back. So they do have the way to get the cap space needed to get in the bidding and make a competitive offer for Holmes. And so you mentioned some teams that have a lot of cap space that could make them some serious offers. And Charlotte's the one that definitely sticks out the most because they have the biggest need for a center among all these teams you mentioned. My guess is that whether it's in free agency or a trade, they'll probably come away this offseason with a new starting center, some veteran center at least. I could see them also potentially getting in the Jared Allen race if the Cavs take Evan Mobley, maybe he becomes expendable. Just a thought there. But they can easily sign Holmes outright as well. I've got them at close to $24 million in cap space, while also being able to re-sign Devontae Graham after. So they will have more than enough to make a big offer for Holmes. Just a team that really sticks out as a suitor for him. And the other teams you mentioned, you have Toronto, you have Dallas. They're also good fits, depending on a couple of things. With Toronto, they seem like they're a little on the fence in regard to what they're going to do next. If they want to take a step back and retool a bit, or if they just want to remain as competitive as possible. Either way, I've got them at close to $21 million in cap space. So right there, they already have a lot, like Charlotte, to make them a serious offer. And in either scenario, I think they Holmes can fit, whether it's just like a small retool or they go straight to competition. I think there's space for Holmes there. Then there's Dallas also. They can make just as big an offer as any of those teams. I would imagine there'd be some other moving parts in the process just because they already have a lot of other big men there. So maybe they move off one or two of those guys to have room for Holmes. But either way, I think Holmes is in an excellent spot this offseason. He's definitely going to get some very strong offers, and all these situations seem like good spots for him.
No, absolutely. And, you know, Yossi, so a couple of the other teams that you touched on, you know, that I have brought up, for one, the Charlotte Hornets. So regarding the Charlotte Hornets, anytime I talk to agents that represent, you know, big men in this market, or just getting a feel in general, the number one thing that they talk about in terms of potential fits for their guys and the centers in the league is that playing with a guy like LaMelo Ball is going to open up a lot of easy lob opportunities on offense, and the team has a great need for not just one center, but even possibly two. You know, Bismack Biyombo, Cody Zeller, you know, their futures are up in the air as free agents, and whether they come back or not. You know, they're a team that is on the verge of being a playoff team in the East, especially with a healthy Gordon Hayward and the rise of LaMelo Ball. So for me, you know, you touched on Jared Allen. I think that would be interesting for them. Charlotte has shown an ability in the past to make an offer sheet and not be afraid to be out of the market for a few days. They had done it previously with Gordon Hayward before he eventually ended up coming to them in unrestricted free agency years later. But that's a team that is certainly, from a big man perspective, I'd argue the team that a lot of free agents have their eye on because of those dynamics of playing with LaMelo Ball and getting lobs and the front court need that they have. When you touch on the Raptors and the Mavericks, you know, Rashawn's a guy that's young enough at his age, where I think he's 27 now, where he's still got prime years ahead of him, but also he has an opportunity to fit with a younger team too, kind of like the way he was in Sacramento. So interesting to look at him there. And also, that when you touched on Toronto, I think for them, first and foremost, their biggest key is retaining Gary Trent Jr. You know, when they made the trade and got him for Norman Powell, it signaled a little bit more of a rebuild. But what's going to be interesting with Toronto is you've got OG Anunoby, you've got Pascal Siakam. You know, if you get a defensive type of big man, you know, one of the guys I would say to keep an eye on with Toronto that had been reported on Hoops Hype was the Toronto Raptors, that, you know, because Nerlens is a guy that fits defensively with that front court. Now, again, I'm not saying that it would be just Nerlens. You know, what's going to happen with Rashawn Holmes is going to dictate the free agent market for the rest of the big men, including Nerlens and Noel. You know, because ultimately, like Jared Allen, Cleveland runs the show there with him being a restricted free agent. Now, if they got Evan Mobley, that could change the dynamic maybe. I think if you're a free agent and you're a center, you are hoping that Cleveland does not end up with Evan Mobley, because then they have a real decision to make. I think if you're a free agent on the market, you're hoping that Cleveland gets a guard in the draft and moves off Colin Sexton, as opposed to potentially a sign and trade with Jared Allen. And I mean, again, Cleveland loves Jared Allen. So it would be interesting to see if they did go with Evan Mobley. That would be interesting. I don't think you can necessarily play Mobley and Jared Allen together. But, you know, Yossi, we touched on a lot of the potential scenarios where Rashawn Holmes can go. Before you know it, the draft's going to be here, and then all the dominoes are going to fall pretty rapidly, in my opinion. And it's going to be fun to break it down with you.
Yeah, I'm excited off season's finally here. I can't wait to cover it with you some more.
Absolutely, brother. And on behalf of my colleague Yossi, I want to thank everyone for tuning in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoopside Podcast with guest appearances from NBA players, coaches, executives, and media members, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can also keep up with my tweets on Twitter, at Mike A. Scotto. Make sure you're following Yossi, too. He's at Yossi Goslin, YOSSIGOZLAN. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.